Hello, everybody. I'm Donna Robertson. I'm president of ACSA. And I welcome you and thank you for attending this session. The Women's Leadership Council is sponsoring this session called Aspirations to Leadership. I want to thank the Women's Leadership Council for all that they've given to ACSA over the years. This was a grassroots effort started, how long ago, Frances? Five years? Longer, maybe. In any event, it's been a group getting together led by Judith Schein, Frances Brunnett, of course, Beverly Willis, Wanda Babriski, and Christine Theodopoulos. Who? Geraldine Forbes, I say it. And they coalesce the rest of us to get together at every annual conference to talk about issues of common concern regarding women in architecture. Mostly focused towards education, but also towards the professional path that women encounter as they exit their education. So in this session, we had hoped to present perhaps a developed program out of the last 5 years conversations that would be focused on some very specific questions about, that might face women faculty as they start or progress in their careers and might be thinking about how along the path strewn with day-to-day responsibilities to the academy and to their life, how they might also think more long-term and strategize for developing a career. And so that's what our two speakers will be talking about today. We have with us Frances Brunnett, who is the dean at the University of Oregon's School of Architecture and every other artistic endeavor you can imagine. And Sharon Matthews, previously the executive director of NAAB, but now an international consultant on matters of accreditation and education, not specifically architectural education, but of course, plentifully that, but also the general issues for education in the global practice realm. So before we start with the program, which will be presentations by our two speakers, and then we hope it allows enough time for conversation, discussion, and questions with you, please allow me to make two announcements regarding the conference. First of all, in your conference agenda or brochure, there are directions for how to get to the CCA for tonight's keynote speaker and exhibition and reception. There are buses of transport leaving, and there are other instructions if you want to walk the 2.1 miles to CCA. And I hope that everybody will have a chance to attend that. So much hard work has gone into this conference, led by our co-chairs, Isla Berman and Ed Mitchell. And tonight's going to be a wonderful culmination with the keynote speaker being Greg Pascarelli, who just received the Tau Sigma Delta Award in honor of their 100th anniversary. The other one is an announcement from NCARB, and I quote, NCARB is looking for candidates for the ARE Test Specification Task Force. The ARE Test Specification Task Force is responsible for the development of the test specification for the next version of the Architect Registration Examination, as you know at the ARE. The test specification will be created within an already approved structural framework and be based on the findings of the 2012 Practice Analysis of Architecture. The task force will be responsible for aligning the appropriate knowledge, skills, and tasks identified in the practice analysis into the revised structure of the ARE. And if you haven't had a chance to read the practice analysis, I encourage you to go to their website. It's a lot of deep research and full of interesting findings. The prerequisite for participation with this task force is you must be licensed. The volunteer commitment is that you are required to attend 2 3-day meetings and additional web meetings if necessary between the months of July and October. Each meeting will be held on a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in a location within the United States. Appropriate hotel, travel, and meal costs associated with meeting participation are reimbursed by NCARB. Exact meeting dates have not been set at this time. However, the meetings are anticipated for mid-July and late September. Task force members are also required to complete two assignments in preparation for or between meetings. Volunteers should anticipate approximately 10 to 20 hours of effort for each assignment. The work of the task forces will be completed by the end of October with no further responsibilities. Now, if I might put in a personal plug for this, part of what I have looked at in capacities I've held both as head of NAAB back in 2003 and now president of ACSA is the need to foster a lot of communication and collaboration between our collateral professional organizations, and to help the understanding of perspectives across the aisles, if you will. And one thing we need to do is to get educators more involved in the business of the other collateral organizations. And I know many of you already are helping out with AIAS or AIA, but this is your chance to get in a very seminal moment with NCARB on thinking about the ARE, which will be ultimately of great benefit to your students. So I hope you consider this seriously. And with that, I'd like to turn the program over, first of all, to Frances, and then Sharon.
Welcome, everybody. And I have to say, this is great. We offer lunch, and we have a much broader audience, and it's terrific. Although, to be honest, we were very nervous that we'd have six people and a lot of food. So let me start. This started as putting together some thoughts so that we didn't have what we normally have is often a kind of session where we all are in some ways complaining. And how do we move forward? I think for those of you who are administrators, there's some things that you should think about in terms of how do you nurture new faculty, and in fact, students as well. And for those of us who are, those of you who are young faculty members, some of this is gonna seem like it's so far in the future, And it's actually not. And so there might be some things that are going to go very, very quickly. Ultimately, we'll put this up on the ACSA website, so it'll evolve, and I'm hoping that we get some feedback about it. But let me begin. Becoming a leader is not an accidental practice. However, in many institutions, our leap into higher administration or leading research centers has been unplanned, unintended, and often unencouraged. This session will look at how to proactive ways to anticipate leadership opportunities and set up multiple modes of accessing research or administration leadership. Many of you know that when Vince Lombardi was asked how to make a touchdown, guess where I'm coming from, by the way, Oregon, in football, he said, go for daylight. In other words, he had no plan. He acted as the opportunities presented themselves. A similar pitch doesn't work so well for proactive leadership. So we started with how to get there from here, wherever you are. So I'm gonna go through a series of points. One, where are you now? How did you get here? How far back should we go? Cultural, socioeconomic, physical history? What influences on you? What community will make a difference? What was your education? Where did you go to school? Will that make a difference? Tenure-related, non-tenure-related, research institute, your current position. Where are you right this minute? So what kind of school are you at? And it's really important to understand the landscape of your schools, both at your unit level and at the university level. Are you at a private institution, a technology institution, arts institution, liberal arts institution, research institution, a public institution with master's granting or a technology art institution, a PhD granting institution, AAU. For some of you, this is like, what is that? The level of prestige of the university, in the college, the department of the university, where are you located? Two, what do you imagine yourself doing? Do you have a passion? Is a passion important or just an idea? Can you have it all? Can you be an administrator and a teacher scholar? When you enter administration, can research, publication, and teaching persist? Some administrative jobs have flexibility to teach, required incredible discipline, time management, energy, and drive. However, if you go keep going up the ladder, given development and external relations travel for certain positions, regular schedules are always compromised, and it may be just easier to continue to publish. Academic administration is a full-time responsibility. It requires a lot of priority setting. Networking and meetings are essential, including attending national meetings with other administrators. Development and external communications are part of the job. Grant writing, success is dependent on those primary job responsibilities. Your own identity, are you first a scholar, a creator, an educator, administrator, or two or all of the above? And we think we're all of the above, by the way. How will you get your leadership work done? As a head, as a dean, as a provost, as president, as a VP for undergraduate education, as running a research institute, a VP for research, and where can you do this best? So go back to all those other institutions. Where can you do that best? Why would you do it? Number three, a desire to address or improve academic quality, tenure and promotion, raising a school to the next level through a stronger student body, through rankings, through whatever the appropriate metrics are in your unit. There are rewards and challenges as a leader, as an administrator, as a fundraiser, as a mentor, as a diplomat, as a problem solver, as a member of the faculty. You have an interest in big questions, new models for education, how to work across the campus and beyond. You have a commitment to your institution. You want to use skills as an administrator. You have to understand that most of your position is about personnel challenges. Personnel, not personal. In fact, none of your own personal issues can come to bear. You must no longer, you always have to be the grown-up. Let me just say that. You are always the grown-up now. You may want to parlay your superstardom as a scholar into administration. And by the way, the most frequently sacrificed aspiration in a dean or president is your superstardom as a scholar. The opportunity to initiate broader, big ideas at varying levels of an institution. Interest in pursuing technical questions about metrics and resources, budgeting, program evaluation. You like challenging management problems. Some of you are getting sick just listening to this. This is probably, then leadership might not be for you. Many opportunities to help the good and confront the difficult. Actually, there's probably many more about confronting the difficult, and how do you turn it into helping the good? And so your levels of influence change. As a faculty member, you have direct impact on students in classes and labs, our studios. Ability to have a large positive impact, however, is somewhat limited. As a chair or a head, you lead disciplinary curricular reform to improve student opportunities and success. You gather resources for faculty and teaching and research. As a dean, you get to allocate broader college-wide resources to incentivize direction, support leadership initiatives, student research. As a VP for research, provost or president, obviously you're able to pilot much larger scales, including the institutional, government, external communities. You want to devote a lot of time getting resources for other people and for other units versus working on your own stuff. You actually enjoy doing projects and work that many faculty avoid: strategic planning, management, development. And by doing it, you move the institution forward. You have chances to use your creativity and communication prowess. You have freedom to engage any discipline at the university because you're interested in it, both for understanding the current content and context, but also because you just like to learn. You have an opportunity to work at multiple levels of the university. And as architects, what others see as downsides or as daunting, we see as just normal. The job is relentless and all-consuming. Long hours, easy. We're good with that. Everyone wants our opinion. And great opportunities to go beyond casual dress. We like to dress up. Okay, what do you need to get there? This is actually how the whole thing started and how I believed I screwed up, or mistakes that I've made. If you want to be a provost, you need a PhD. Now, you might not need it at a, master's granting institution. You might even need it to be a president, although, when governors become presidents, you don't need to have a PhD. It's really important for you to be a full professor. Many, and in this room, have been associate professors as heads and deans, and there's a huge danger of being derailed by service. You really need to build your CV. You need a solid history of scholarship, creative work, and critical citizenship. How do we define excellence? Is it originality or setting a high standard that we live up to by some explicit process? A number of you have talked about the fact that it's not so explicit at your own universities what the processes are to be excellent. Or does it mean not being provincial and being aware of what's going on in the world? You need to make sure that your work is done and recognized nationally and internationally, heavily noted through the press, including public intellectual or critical citizenship or leadership. And as an aside, if this were only women, I would say this. There's also a large disparity in tenured professorships, increasingly hard to come by positions that are often the pipeline to leadership positions at universities, and nearly twice as many men, 64%, as women have tenure. Five, normative routes to leadership, because Sharon is actually going to talk about all the other, a whole set of other models for leadership. So this is already maybe too linear and not reflective of what really is going on in the world. It sometimes occurs this way, and maybe this is what I'm familiar with, but many new models are emerging. So the sort of academic pure, you know, you have a curriculum director to program director to head, head to dean, dean of a single discipline school, multidiscipline school, the uber dean like Washington University, the dean to the provost to the president. Then you have mixed professional academic outreach. This refers to both public work as opposed to private scholarship. Whatever it is, you have to own a topic or a set of topics that are relevant, and it takes a lot of time to develop. One of the things we're talking about for the different levels of even attending an ACSA conference, so I hate to be facetious, but I certainly, if I go through my career, the first few years before I got tenure, I never left the rooms that where people were giving papers. Never talked to anybody in the hallway. I just had to see how people were delivering papers. As soon as I was basically got tenure and was thinking about my next stage, I could spend a little bit more time in workshops like this. And then after I did the papers and the workshops, I could, and then I started to do workshops in corridor. I skipped the papers. And then eventually I was just in the corridor. Now I'm not even in the corridors. I'm actually meeting donors down the hall, you know, in little rooms, and sometimes I'm in the corridors. So there's actually these stages in which we operate, and maybe not everybody does that, but that's how I'm so successful. Yeah. All right. All right. You need to have demonstrated success at something, whether it's community practice that is national or international present. And you need to prove to whoever is with you, peers, and above you, why what you do in your unit is increasing their stature. Now, at our level, my job is to make sure that I clear the crap out of the way so that my faculty stature is increased. But I think this is one of those things where there's a reciprocity. Think about national designs and awards and practice. We wrote a paper, we'll also try to put it up, a draft of a paper on PNT boot camp. Pardon, I apologize for the language at some level, but basically architects and designers, we have a tendency to think you can just translate that into the academy. The academy excellence is you have to see peer awards, you have to see peer review, you have to have awards, you have to be published. It isn't that you just did a really nice house, you know, for your family. An increasing record of success in garnering external resources is critical, whether it's NS, National Science Foundation, National Institute of Health, the Department of Transportation, National Endowment for the Arts, just little money diminishing more and more. Partnering across other entities. As you move up, do you know how to fundraise? Making sure you have opportunities for that. Then working in places where there's academic competitions or research grants. National leadership, AIA, ACSA, NAAB, NICP for historic preservation, any kind of national organization, leadership, executive presidency, a university senate presidency, a world-class practice. Those are really critical. And then six, what are the expectations at your university? You need to know what they are, because you actually have to map that onto what you're doing, whether it's an engineering institution, a private institution, a large public institution. And then when you think about what kind of a design school or university do you imagine leading? Is it an experimental one, a pragmatic one, an insular one, an outward-facing one? there's a lot of different kinds of institutions. In fact, our strength is the ecology of the institutions that we have. How do you know when it's the right fit? And it may not make a difference as a faculty member, but I can tell you the next level up, it's going to make a big, big difference. And it's going to make a difference because you're going to feel like you actually can do something there. The scale of the school, the opportunities for unanticipated leadership. What's the university administration like? What do they want in a leader? How will you be evaluated? What are they willing to invest? And this goes on and on. If you're going to be a dean or a provost or a president, is there a development staff that's where fundraising is actually supported? Is the quality of the student body, does it make a difference? Who the student body is, does that make a difference? Is ranking important to you? What rankings? It's really important to see how the faculty saw the last head, the last dean, the last president with respect to collegiality, fundraising, mission setting, promoting faculty scholarship, being collegial. Well, I said that already, I'll say it again, being collegial. The alumni base, what's the environment of the school? What's the budget like? That's a big one. Are they willing to hear an outsider if you're moving? What about collegiality? Oh, did I say that already? Yeah. Okay, are you mobile? Okay, so this is another big thing we hear a lot about. When are you mobile? You're building a family and friendship community in a city. You're building partners in the university. Can you take your work, your professional work on the road? Can you take your family on the road? Can you take your friends on the road? Can you leave your friends and connections? What about your practice? What about your family? Do you have the right partner? How do you know you have the right partner? This is for those very young people here. I just want to say. Can your partner go? Has domestic work been adequately addressed? Do you do any domestic work? That was just saying. There's a very easy way to deal with that. Just don't do it. Can your children leave particular programs? Can what you're doing be done long distance, including leading the institution or the school? What if you're not mobile? What are the routes around the institution while you're at that institution? Can you be a national leader? Can you be an international leader? Okay, how are you going to get any information about who's going to tell you what to do? So number 11, mentoring. Okay, number one, you can have more than one mentor at one time and at different times, and some of these mentors do one kind of job and another do another kind of job. The mentors have more than one mentee, remember that? And sometimes they are in conflict about recommendations. Also, the mentee probably needs more than one person they can rely on. So to help your own mentor, be informed, make sure you know what you're being measured on and what you're asking about. What mentoring is not, for those of us in here who think we're mentors, you don't discourage people from moving forward, and you need to be clear about what's a good fit for them. If you see a really big mismatch, you need to be clear about it. You need to find multiple mentors who have gone through this. They have knowledge of the roots, they have a level of experience greater than your own. They'll recommend you, they'll look out for you, you can call them on a dime, they can give you advice in multiple domains with real specificity, how to apply, how to interview, how to negotiate, how to accept. You have to go to national workshops, get your school to pay for you to go to national workshops, and tell them you'll deliver that work back to them. You'll present that workshop to everybody else in the university. And there's a lot. There's ACE, there's ADVANCE, there's the HERS Institute at Bryn Mawr, UC Denver. There's the Doctorate in Higher Education Leadership at UPenn, low residency doctorate. Can your school pay for that? Networking, for example, here at ACSA. What's the timing in any position? Number 12, when should you leave? Are there department, school, university opening opportunities for you to lead? Does your unit or university have a record of supporting leadership? How long should you stay in one position? How long should you stay at the institution? You may need to move before you think you're ready. Data indicates that women move less because we wait, and the following make it okay. As long as you're achieving more in the domain that you've defined, you're not frustrated and being hemmed in, and you're respected. Practices to get new positions. Have appropriate recommenders and connections. Build your network based on excellence, scholarship. Take it on the road. There's the geek model, there's the rock star model. The familiar scholarly models, which we would call, let's say, the geek model, as opposed to the non-traditional venues, including TED or Davos, get out there. Getting the next position, what do you need to know? Who makes the decision? So for a faculty position, the faculty and the head are critical. For a deanship, the faculty, other deans, provosts, the professional community can help or jettison your candidacy. For a presidency, the external community is incredibly significant. Molly Broad, who's the president of ACE right now, says the dearth of female college presidents comes down to the hiring process. Since a president is selected by an institution's board of trustees, women, especially minority women, are virtually absent from most. Tips on navigating the interview process and news about job openings tend to stay among the insiders, men. It wasn't called the old boys network for nothing, Broad says. It applies to academia, not just Wall Street. She spent 10 years as the president of the University of North Carolina system, the first woman in the post in more than 200 years, and even with an amazingly smart man on the UNC board, recalls Broad, when I first nominated a woman as chancellor of one of our campuses, the trustee grumbled, "I thought we did that already." Be prepared for a really public process. Life interruptions, 15, family, children, parents, relationships, illness, opportunities, changes in leadership at your institution. Your own progression, age could be a factor, something that derailed your career. Don't be afraid of tooting your own horn. Don't wait to be noticed. Ask for it. And I'm going to stay away from all the literature on different expectations and our own reactions to it. But as both Marvin and Bob have said in their administrators' workshops, get press for everything you do. But watch out for the public record, meaning putting things out there that shouldn't be out there. They actually do hurt us. Not all press is good press. It can haunt you. And let people know who you trust, what's confidential, and what you want out there. In the job, what are dead ends? Be careful of following particular design gurus and pedagogical leaders who are still associate professors. They are critical inside the school, but have perhaps no presence outside the unit. Make sure that you're in, they say they're places of promise, but little history of support and engagement. What happens when something goes wrong, when the institution didn't support you? Is there anything that we can do? Coming back to the mentors, the networks, and what can be anticipated and what cannot be anticipated? And then, what kind of institution is it with respect to cultivating leadership? Choose wisely. You want to support, I'm going to say, any advancement. This is about female advancement. Discourages stereotyping. Open and well-structured system for evaluating. Find a place that supports leadership with multiple conditions. Having a family, not having a family. Respecting your ambitions and working with them. Have a very clear-eyed understanding of what the historic record of what kinds of departments frequently yield deans and from what colleges. And from what colleges, in a disciplinary sense, provosts emanate. It's very sobering, by the way. Create your own organization to reduce token status, meaning recruit other women, mentor other women who rise to high levels, work actively to build networks of women that can provide the same benefits that men's networks have traditionally provided. Build conduits for information, provide opportunities to establish relationships with peers in related fields, create sources of mutual support. And research the history of how many women from what department or college origins have made it up the chain. ACE, the American Council on Education, by the way, sorry, says 23% of college presidents are women, a marked improvement over 1986, 10%. But in a profession that's often associated with women, 75% of US school teachers, not including professors, are female, the number is shockingly low. Right now, 40% of college presidents are 61 years or older. That means a significant turnover is in the offing. With women getting more involved in philanthropy recently, opportunity for more women joining trustee boards and influencing the selection of college presidents is evident. So you notice I'm talking about presidents. We have four presidents who are architects in this country, in the entire country, or have been. They're not all, sorry, three and one provost. It's time for us actually to move up that chain. I will say that there's also a demographic. Was really shocking for me to look at the demographics of who were the first female deans in the country, how old they were, and the first male deans. And it was first male deans were 31 years old, and two of the first female deans who are sitting in this room were 10 years older. So that's an interesting thing to think about. I'm going to wrap up with a couple more. You have to be willing to address conflict, complex situations, relinquish time for your own practice, research, and teaching. You might be better at this than that. You're prepared to always be the adult, the grown-up. You're willing to be in a fishbowl, meaning in the press, positively and negatively, to have an external face. And then what paths would you not take? The university is in disarray, and the situation is untenable, and the climate's really unfavorable. The research and design excellence is great, but you've got to develop a case that your passion for it can be set aside in favor of ambition on behalf of the institution. This is a particular place where there may be some hidden contradictions in a search committee. They want a diva, but they need a mensch. That means somebody who's actually going to do the work and not have to take all the credit for it. It's not always true that being an associate dean or an associate provost will help you rise to dean or provost. The perception that an administrator is not necessarily a leader, that you're an implementer and not a visionary. And you don't want to be at a place where there's few opportunities for accruing the skills in critical responsibilities and criteria in the searches, for example, vision, development, personnel management, budget, promotion, and tenure. You need to build an incredible staff around you, and you have to be given the opportunity to do that if you really want to lead. You can't do it all yourself. And don't be afraid to be looking. And for those of you in your 20s and 30s, start looking now. Check the Chronicle of Higher Education, ACSA job postings for positions you may not be ready for. You're an assistant professor and perusing deanships, or you're a dean and looking at presidential positions, because you need to know what the pipeline is. You need to start early understanding what awards there are that are career launchers or lauders, whether it's a Guggenheim, a Topaz, the MacArthur, a TED Fellow. The TED Fellows, they want people 21 to 40. For most of us in this room, we're done, right? And the TED Fellow has an entire mentorship network that's extraordinary and international. And you cannot not get an incredible position being in that crowd. And if you're over 40, you're out. Connect with the search firms now. You may have met them when you were on a committee. You may have been contacted by them for someone you worked with or for. Let them know what you might be interested in 5 years from now. Ask around and to find out what the positions are like. Begin to find mentors through these questions and get information from organizations like this. Let me end with saying, Sharon, it's all yours. Life without normative leadership. Thank you.
I wish I had known a third of that, Frances, when I started. My side of the story is a lot more personal because I didn't do many of the things that were on Frances's list. I think I lived mostly my entire life backwards, but because I started teaching before I had actually finished an undergraduate degree, which after I became an administrator, I understood why. There was somebody who was running a program, and she had two classes that had 20-something students signed up, and class started in 3 days. She would have hired anybody who would have shown up in 3 days and talked in front of those classes. It was an awe-inspiring moment for me, though. I was broke. I needed the money, so I said I would do it. I made it up on the spot. And eventually, I went back to school and I did achieve some credible degrees. After graduate school, I went into practice. I'm telling you this because you need to understand a little bit of the background so the rest of the story is going to make some sense. I went into practice. There was an economic downturn in 91. I had been teaching part-time. I decided I'd teach full-time until the economy got better, then I'd go back. But of course, it turned out that I almost right away got an administrative job, and I loved it. It was a good fit for me. I was at Norwich University. I was the head of a small rural school. And then I was recruited to go to Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston, which is a big urban school. And then I was recruited to go to the NAAB, which was a huge sideways, I thought at the time, shift for me. But what happened when I went to the NAAB was that I began to understand how the collateral organizations work together. So prior to that, I really had no idea. I had no idea that there was such a thing as a five presidents council, where the presidents of the AIA, NAAB, NCARB, and ACSA, and the Students Association get together and talk to each other about policy. And they don't make policy or edicts, but they do talk to each other about what's going on in each of their associations. And it's from those associations that the NAB board is made up. So there are opportunities at all of those levels. Kate was supposed to be here today, but Kate Swenson, who is an academic who went on to be the president of the American Institute of Architects. There hasn't yet been a woman executive director, although that's not what they call it these days, at the AIA, but that's an opportunity. We have had a woman as the exec at NCARB, not from the world of academe, but from the AIA and from practice side of the house. And we have had women from who have taught, although not regular faculty appointments, as presidents of NCARB. So there's NCARB, there's NAAB, which had many, including Donna, presidents of NAAB, and the AIA and ACSA, of course. Those are all opportunities that are outside the world of assistant, associate, full professor, dean, provost, president. And before I forget, I want to say something about president. The first time I went to Turkey, I met a woman who is an architect, had an active practice, taught at Istanbul Technical University, has a PhD, and became twice the president of Istanbul Technical University. 20,000 students. That woman was elected by the faculty of Istanbul Technical University twice. For 8 years, she served as the president of that school. There's never been a woman architect or president in the United States, never. She's one of my heroes. So anyway, I went to the NAB, and when I left the NAB, it was at a moment when there was an association of accrediting agencies being formed called the Canberra Accord. And the Canberra Accord consists of accrediting agencies, now probably more than this, but in the beginning it was Canada, the U.S., Mexico, China, South Korea, Australia, and the Commonwealth Association of Architects. And those associations came together and signed an agreement that they would recognize the graduates of their programs as having degrees that were substantially equivalent. So for a while they were writing the rules for that, I worked with Andrea Rutledge and George Henderson, who was the president of the Canberra Accord Association at the time. And we devised rules for this kind of accreditation. At the same time, I was working as a consultant for something called the Center for Quality Assurance in Higher Education. And the quality assurance is the term that's used worldwide for talking about standards in accreditation, institutional accreditation, as well as professional and specialized accreditation. And so because of that experience with the accreditors of the Canberra Accord, and because of the experience with the Center for Quality Assurance in International Higher Ed, I traveled a lot, and I saw a lot of schools out there. I went to Indonesia, I went to Vietnam, I went to Saudi Arabia, I went to Korea, I went to a lot of places. So I could see what was happening as the architectural education world has been changing over the past 10 years. And one of the things that I saw was that architecture faculty, almost in the United States less than everywhere else, are involved in governmental and NGO policy around the world. So one of the things, one of the lessons that I've learned that I would like to share is that there are organizations out there like the OECD, the Organization for Economic Development and Cooperation, and those people, because they control big data, because they control statistics, they have an enormous impact on what happens in the built environment. They, together with an organization like the World Bank, make huge changes in the world. And they do this by controlling research and by controlling millions, if not billions, of dollars. And there are very, very few people from our world, the world of design education, that have voices in those realms. And so anything, if you want to go sideways, if you want to go out and not into the hierarchical path to being a president, there are venues out there that you can take part in if you have a PhD or at least a master's in some specialty to go along with your architecture degree, that you can make an enormous difference in the built environment if you're willing to look in those realms. For instance, right now on the OECD job website, there's an advertisement for a job in regional development and planning. When I took the job at the NAB, somebody said to me, "Oh, you just followed the money." I have to say, the money outside the world of academics can be very rewarding. So I think following the money is not a bad thing to do. It's not a bad thing to do. It's not a bad thing personally, but it's also a good idea if you really want to make a huge difference in the world. It's like, who's got money? Who's investing that money? Who's paying attention to where that money goes? And the accreditation business was a really good fit for that, because when the World Bank spends a gajillion dollars for the woman that I was working with to go around the world and set up an international network of accrediting agencies, they're doing it because they want to protect their investment. That's why the whole thing happened. There's a group called the International Network for, I'll screw up the acronym now. It's called NQAHI. It's an international network of accrediting associations. And the joke in that, at their meetings that are like this, are that accreditation is the next form of colonization. I know. I mean, you laugh because it makes you nervous. I mean, it made me nervous the first time I heard it. But it's absolutely true. There are a whole bunch of people out there trying to set standards for the whole world. And when you connect that with the investment of millions of dollars, then the people who are paying attention to this should have an architectural background. They should have an architectural education. It's the best education in the world. In my book, everybody in the world should start with architecture school and then go on and specialize in something else. Medicine, auto mechanics.
Yes, here's to us.
It is absolutely the best training that you can have as a human being. But when I went out into that world, there are so few people that have an architectural background. I just felt so anxious that I wanted all of us to be there, to be playing, to bring the understanding and the experience that you have as an architectural, as someone in the architectural educational world, to the decisions that are made, because so many of the decisions are so thin and they're so temporary and they're such a waste of energy and money, and they could be so much better. So partly this is a plea for everybody that if you don't want to take the traditional path, you know, look sideways, because there's a lot to do out there, and there's a lot of energy and of opportunity outside this. I haven't been following these notes at all. Francis was an inspiration to me. I'm trying to think what else I was going to talk about. I would like to add a little bit to some of the things Frances said. For me personally, finding mentors was my own responsibility. I wasn't mentored sort of automatically by anybody. And so I literally went out looking for mentors for myself. And then I think the other side of that coin is that I have worked hard to mentor younger women. So as you progress through these stages of life and of path toward leadership, it's just as important to be looking at the younger generation behind you and helping out the younger generation behind you as it is to take advantage of the wisdom of the people who have gone before. We have a document that I think we're going to post on the ACSA website, and I've added to that document some of the websites that I live in now. And they're all the traditional, I mean, the usual suspects of the collateral associations, but also organizations like the Institute for International Education. The Institute for International Education is having their meeting at the same time this week as this meeting, so I made sure that somebody from the BAC is now at that meeting, because the Institute for International Education funnels money from the State Department to the Fulbrights and to an organization called Education USA. And I cannot say enough good things about Education USA. If you want to go somewhere in the world and you want to meet colleagues or you want to promote programs or you want to look for people to collaborate with, the US State Department is supporting over 400 offices around the world whose job it is to help you. So I went to India. I emailed three of these offices in India. They set up appointments for me with schools. They organized opportunities for me to make presentations to schools in India, to students in the schools in India. I can't tell you how helpful they were, and your tax dollars are all paying for this. They have libraries, and they keep the materials from all our schools on the shelves of those libraries. The only American design school that I saw in India is SCAD. If anybody, Sujen, Greg, you guys are here, you guys are everywhere, everywhere. But the rest of the schools are not, which was very eye-opening. They also, in these places, did not really have a good grasp of how to counsel students in their countries about architectural education in the U.S. So eventually they asked me to make a webinar, which you can find on the Education USA website, about how undergraduate architectural education and graduate, there are two webinars, one for undergraduate, one for graduate, how education works in the United States, which they use to counsel students that want to come to school here. There is another organization that has to do with international education in the United States called NAFSA. It doesn't really stand for anything anymore. It used to stand for Foreign Study Abroad, but it's so much bigger now, it doesn't talk about that. NAFSA is a big organization like the AIA. They have a huge convention every year. The first time I went, somebody asked me when I came back what it was like. I said, it's like trying to sing under a waterfall. There was so much information. There were so many people there that had resources that you can take advantage of. It was a mind-boggling experience. NAFSA is that organization in the United States for international educators, but it has parallels in other countries. So in Europe, it's the European International Education Association, EIAE. In the Pacific region, it's the Asia Pacific Institute for International Education. So there are three big international education associations. There's the IIE for policy and money, the conduit for money in the United States. There's a think tank for international education called the Academic Cooperation Association in Europe. And those are the five major players in international education. I'm telling you that partly now because I went from being a faculty to being head of a little school, head of a bigger school, head of the NAB, and now then I consulted for a while, and then now I have the job that they call in the world of international education, the senior international officer at the Boston Architectural College. So my title is actually director of global initiatives, and what I work on are partnerships, with other schools and helping the BAC become a more international school and less of a regional school. Is that it? Did we talk about everything? Well, I'm happy to answer questions about any of this international. Oh, I know one more thing. I'm sorry. As I have been wandering around in the last 5 years, I know people are not going to want to hear this, but online education is coming. Mm-hmm. The BAC, Lawrence Tech, Academy of Art University all have online degree programs. Others are coming. Deans come to me all the time and ask me about this because for a while I was at the BAC, I was responsible for the staff that support the online education program. So I just want to say that it may not seem like a hot topic to you yet, but within 10 years, it's going to be a done deal, a done deal.
I do want to say, first, thank you. I do want to say that without the prompting of Beverly Willis and her foundation and Wanda Bubrisky, this would not be happening. A number of years ago, apparently more than five, we met in a hotel room at a conference, and it isn't something that we took on as women. We saw it as, well, should we really address that? Aren't we all equal? You know, and in fact, we all know that there are a lot of issues out there, and we have to address them. And I do want to say an incredible thank you to Beverly and to Wanda. They're here, and
It's on now.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you all. That was a wonderful welcome and a wonderful tribute, and it's much appreciated. Thank you.
And she can dance.
And also, Beverly had a very significant practice in this very city. Judith, did you want to say something
no,
too?
Donna asked me to.
Oh, take the mic. Okay, you're the floor.
And I'm hoping that you have questions or comments that you'd like to share with everyone else. Am I on?
But this is on.
History of women's involvement, and it's a very interesting study, and one that we recommend could be taken out to the other schools if we're looking for a proactive project that we might set for ourselves in the next year and maybe revisit it the next annual. It would be this trying to document what goes on in the various schools over the past, 50 years. So Wanda's sitting with Beverly if you have questions about that.
She wants to talk.
Oh, she wants. Go ahead,
yeah.
Wanda.
Hi. Bev gets all the credit, but I take all the photographs and and I document because I'm an architectural historian, and I do have all the meetings of this group. I have photographic documentation, and I promise to you publicly I'll put together a PPT of it because it was a stealth meeting in Philadelphia in 2007. We thought maybe 12 people would show up, about 30 crammed into the hotel room, and it's grown to that. And to see this, the leadership of Francis and Donna and Sharon, but particularly Francis and Donna and Judith, to grow to something of this magnitude with this many men and women is, and it takes men and women working
and
together
food.
to change the culture and to open up and
it.
To be leaders in progressive ways. And there was one other thing, the research that Donna mentioned, I just wanted, it was The first ever reunion of women graduates of the Yale School of Architecture. The first woman graduated in 1947, and it went up incrementally from there. But what I did was primary research, just gathering the numbers. And I can't tell you enough, as the schools that you graduated from, as well as the schools that you teach at, to just gather the data. Because you cannot, you know, you're architects, numbers don't lie. It's either right or wrong. And just try to squirrel away some money to get people, your students, your faculty, whomever, to gather the data. And it's illuminating. And have an alumni reunion. Yeah, work with your alumni, men and women alike, but you know, they're an incredible resource. And I tell you, Robert Stern, I don't know how many of you know Robert Stern. He's the dean at Yale, and he's not known to be the most feminist, I guess. He's not really a feminista. And to see him in the Hastings Hall at Yale with about, how many were there? There were about 300 women graduates. He was a little shaken up, and he was, I think, really amazed and impressed by the quality of the work and the passion. So know that I think it changed him. So know that all of you men and women, know that your women graduates are an important resource and inspiration. And I do want to just say that Beverly has been this ringleader for many of us and all of us. And I'm sort of glad I didn't work with her 35 years ago, but I have for the past 10 years, and it's been a real privilege. And it's been a real privilege to be sort of accepted by ACSA. And you're a terrific group. And just wish that you keep up the good work. And I think you are really the leaders with women in the progressing women in architecture. And just keep it up. And I think this panel's been incredible. And I hope you all took notes. And I think Frances said that her presentation is going to be put up on the website. So for men and women both, it's invaluable information. And Sharon, you're totally inspiring.
We're
as well.
We're going to put them both
up. So Donna, inspires.
Yeah, both presentations we'll are going to be up. All right, I'd like to invite comments or questions from the audience. And please identify yourself.
Sure. Hi, my name's Kian. I'm currently a PhD student at MIT in Urban Studies and Planning, but previously I taught architecture at Penn and at Parsons. And thank you all for the actually incredibly inspiring and fantastic presentations. And I wanted to make a quick comment on something, Sharon, that you had said. I totally agree. There's a wider world of people with power and with implementation tools on the ground that architects are generally not part of, which is partly why I'm doing my doctorate in a different field, in fact. So that, and on that note, though, like when you talk about this new methods of, they are methods of colonization in a way, and like I get all tense, I'm like, oh my God, you know, how are we managing this immense tools of power? And I think as much as we encourage gender justice and inclusion of women, inclusion of people of color, inclusion of gender minorities in this country, I think those of us who have power in architectural education should take a firmer stance on social justice on a global scale. And that's something that I think still is quite lacking as we, you know, this whole conference is about new worlds out there, right? And I don't think we stress quite enough the massive power imbalances that still perpetuate throughout the world. So as we move into those worlds, I think it would be awesome to take more note of that, but thank you.
Thank you. I'll get her to our schools.
Uh, Wanda mentioned a little while ago a reunion at Yale, just, you know, as a piece, as a recommendation. I am working with faculty at City College to see if we can have a reunion there, because I think anyone who sees a gathering of women in the profession will be as impressed as Bob Stern will be, because I think these are things that don't necessarily occur. So I just wanted to share with you that I think Wanda and Beverly both know how to do this. I think they would both be happy to help you in your own schools figure out a way to organize that and produce something of similar type, just as we've done today, meaning not necessarily excluding the men, but certainly have it driven by the legacy of the women who probably strove a little bit more difficult way in the early days to open a path to what is now certainly equality in numbers. I don't know if it's equality in influence, but it's certainly equality in numbers. And it's time for those numbers to network so successfully. And the only way that really happens, I think, is in gathering. So I would urge you to follow that model that Wanda referred to.
I just want to thank both of you for your presentations. And would like to say that it's very difficult. I thank them. Sorry, I was not speaking loud enough, but I thank the presenters, who both of whom have been mentors to me, and there's so many people that have been helpful. That's how one does the work, by having support. Thank you. Okay, it's very difficult to move away into an alternative path, because there's so many forces that tend to push us towards the normative. And so when one takes the alternative path, one is to be one has to accept that for some people one has failed. And that will, it's okay. It's completely fine. But for the junior faculty that are here, it's very important to realize that there are rules in your institution, particularly for tenure and promotion. And that is something that you plan. Some people get hysterical. Just read the instructions. Check out how you get promoted and you go through tenure. And you just, and do it. That is that simple. I have been tenured twice. So I have almost a PhD in that area. And I didn't go crazy. So, but please be aware of the politics and the procedures, and you'll be fine.
Hi, Norman Millar here. I want to add my thanks to the panel. And say that I really appreciate the fact that it was ungender biased, and it appealed to me, and I'm sure to everyone in the room, as a very great resource. And I hope I mentioned to Donna, I hope I sort of see it as a kind of outline that could be expanded upon, possibly in the next generation of the new administrators workshop.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we're gonna put it on the ACSA website, but I do think we can enhance it. And so thank you so much.
I might point out the obvious. There are not enough young faculty in the room, although there are some of you, and I'm very glad you're here. That's structural. Not many of them can afford to come here unless they have a paper they're giving, and many of them who do come here have other sessions they have to attend. We're competing against the JAE editorial board, for instance. So I think one thing you could do, perhaps, if you're looking for something to take away from here that you can do proactively, is to take this out to the junior faculty you know and share with them the resources that will be on the website, and the thoughts that you have coming out of this session. That's the way mentorship works, and it could be just a one-time responsibility to point people in the right direction, or it might start something larger. So if I could ask that you take on that, I think it would be very useful. Others? Comments, questions?
Probably 2 o'clock.
Well, it...
Sessions.
What?
It's two.
Yeah, right. It's time for us to start the next session. So
or just go to the corridors. You know, whatever.
So thanks, everybody, for your attendance.
Thank you.